You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur with the Innovation for Alpha podcast, and I am joined today by a special guest who's actually calling in from overseas, Pedro Correa de Sampaio. And he has got a very interesting therapeutics company called Niobe. We're going to learn about it today. There's some deep science involved. So, Pedro, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here. Thank you, Tobin.
You're going to have to educate us, you know, the layperson, because a lot of what you do is going to be over most people's heads, including mine. So you'll have to dumb it down a little bit. I don't want to speak for my audience. They're quite intelligent. They're much more intelligent than I am. But why don't we just start with a little bit of your background, though? Tell us about yourself, where you came from, and how you got to, you know, creating Niobe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the actual story will help me take it all down to the basics. So I'm originally a cancer researcher. That was my academic background. I'm originally from Portugal, and I did my PhD at the University of Cambridge here in the UK, which is where I'm based now. And my interest has been from sort of very early on the tumor microenvironment, basically everything that makes up a solid tumor that isn't a cancer cell, anything from the vasculature to the immune system to local fibroblasts to the extracellular matrix that sort of keeps everything in place and provides the structure for, you know, every organ, but also for solid tumors. I was originally interested in the vasculature of tumors, and I studied how blood vessels formed within the context of the solid tumor, was sort of developing 3D models, which at the time was quite a new thing, and now it's sort of everyone is doing it, to study blood vessel formation in solid tumors. And I then moved to the States, where I lived for 7 years in Houston, which I miss dearly, where I did a postdoc at the MD Anderson Cancer Center. And I continued studying their different aspects of the tumor microenvironment. And I worked on a lot of different things, but one of the things that I became particularly interested in was on the spatial interaction between different components of the microenvironment of the tumor. We developed some technology that we could use to, through mathematical algorithms, determine how distant different types of cells in a tumor are from each other, and how that sort of correlates to the way a cancer patient progresses. And during the process of that, I started becoming aware of this concept of immune exclusion, which is something that I then became very interested in, or the fact that in some subsets of solid tumors, even though there is clearly an immune reaction against the tumor and there are immune cells being recruited into sort of the general environment of the tumor, these immune cells kind of get trapped in interstitial regions and are unable to get close to the cancer cells. And those particular types of tumors can't then respond to therapeutic strategies that activate these immune cells against the cancer.
So that's incredible. And as you mentioned, you're in Houston, you're at MD Anderson, which, you know, is obviously a world-renowned institution. Was it there where you started to create the foundations of Niobe, or did you head back to the UK and Cambridge to get this started? What was the evolution at that point?
I came back. It was a little bit of a convoluted process. The idea, the seed behind it that eventually sort of germinated into what Niobe is right now was there. It was that project that I was talking about when I started becoming aware of the problem, let's say. The solution came later when I sort of decided that I wanted to take a step away from academia because I felt like I wanted to work on something that was a little bit more applied. I felt like I was getting to a point where I wanted to see sort of a real outcome of my work that wasn't just a grant or a paper or whatever it is. And I had the opportunity of going to a couple of different immunotherapy companies. Immunotherapy, of course, being sort of, you know, a huge blockbuster in cancer research and in cancer therapeutics right now, this whole, you know, concept of activating an immune response against cancer cells. In the process of of trying to decide where I was going to go, I ended up in a conference getting to know this company here in the UK called Deep Science Ventures that is interested in developing or training and financing scientists to take their ideas and turn them into a company to solve a particular pressing problem. And one of the areas that they were interested in was cancer, and within cancer specifically, exactly the problems that the tumor microenvironment caused to the success of immunotherapies, which was exactly, you know, up my street. And it was the basically meeting the right person at the right time. And I thought, I've got ideas, I can do this. And that's how the process started.
Pretty interesting. I had forgotten about this, but I had a chance to meet someone who's also out of Cambridge, who is known as kind of the godfather of modern imaging. And when I was chatting with him at one point, and he's an older gentleman at this point, and he's had many, many successes. Much of his work is now in Siemens and General Electric imaging mm-hmm. systems. And he was sharing actually the very same thing. He said he was, you know, very much of an academic and a researcher. And in his particular case, when he was about 40, he said his mother-in-law passed away of breast cancer. And it was really an impactful time in his life. He said, you know, unlike a lot of son-in-laws, he actually liked his mother-in-law. And he said he decided he wanted to spend the rest of his career working on things that had application instead of sort of academic. And so he went to commercial, you know, into commercial development. So it's interesting. And
absolutely.
So there must be something being done right out in that part of the world where they're taking researchers.
I do think that there's, you know, we academics, because I still, you know, deep down consider myself an academic.
Right. What's an academic?
Always an academic. And we tend to think of the industry, commercialization, et cetera, as almost kind of this big sort of monster in the dark side. But the fact of the matter is, I think particularly in the past sort of 10, 15 years, there's been a lot of really interesting innovation happening in the startup world, in health tech, in biotech. And it was a world that I was interested in exploring. And this is not, again, as I said, I still consider myself an academic. So this is not this academia at all or basic biology. I always thought I wanted to be a basic biology, and nothing that we do in biotech can be done without all of the, you know, background years of research that is put into the field. I just, you know, personally felt that the whole, you know, the whole politics of we need to rush towards the next paper, rush towards the next grant, which is obviously important,
sure,
wasn't sort of fulfilling me anymore. And I felt like I needed to work towards some sort of product that I could put out there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so let's jump into NEOB a little bit. And why don't you educate the audience, and, you know, you can go as deep as you want, but for the layperson, you know, talk a little bit about immunotherapy just to create some context, but specifically then with NEOB, my understanding is you're really working to address the fact that, you know, the majority of tumors don't, they're not impacted, they're not responding to immunotherapy. And so you're working mm-hmm. to unlock and make immunotherapy more effective to a broader base of tumors. Is that generally accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly it. But then the question is how we do that, right? I was, you know, starting with immunotherapies, as you said, and I've touched on this briefly already. I think it's you know, it's been probably the biggest step forward that we've had in the clinical management of cancer in the past few years. I was incredibly fortunate to, as I said, work at MD Anderson, which is the home of Jim Allison, who won the Nobel Prize for his work in immunotherapy, and we had some collaborations with him, so that kind of, you know, turned me on to the whole field, which is this idea of harnessing your own immune system to recognize your cancer cells as a foreign body and eliminate them, particularly in sort of the classic example, which are checkpoint inhibitors, is the development of drugs that recognize breaks that you have in your immune cells that stop them from eliminating cancer cells and taking those breaks away or inhibiting those breaks. But the problem is, for that to work, again, as I hinted to earlier, the immune cells need to be able to get to their place of action. They need to be able to get close to the cancer cells, because this is how they work. They kill them by direct contact. And in a significant proportion of cancer patients, patients with solid tumors particularly, exists this phenomena, this sort of phenotype called immune exclusion, which we like when I'm pitching the company, when I'm pitching Neo, I like to compare it as a castle, to tumor being a castle and the immune system or immune cells being an army trying to overtake that castle. And in this subset of patients, you have a wall that is built around the castle and the immune cells just can't get over it. And if they can't get over it, they're not going to be able to do their job, no matter how sophisticated the weapons are that you give to this army, right? And this is what we wanted to do with Neo, was exactly taking apart these barriers, these blocks to immune infiltration in these tumors so that these patients can start responding to immunotherapies. But in order to do that, because obviously we're not the first people trying to do that, one of the things that needed to be addressed is that these components of the local microenvironments that exist in a tumor exist also in all of your healthy tissues. So what we needed was to come up with a way where we can take these apart in the tumor locally without affecting your healthy organism. How are we going to do that? And the way that we came up to do that was to basically harness the innate capabilities of tumor colonizing bacteria. Because we know, and there's a lot of science out there showing this, that there's a number of bacteria that can be resident in tumors, that can colonize solid tumors. It has to do with the kind of conditions that you have there, from, you know, the type of vasculature that tumors have, from the nutrient availability that exists there, levels of oxygen, pH, etc. There's a number of bacteria that really like to thrive in that kind of environment. If we can take those bacteria and use synthetic biology to manipulate them to produce a drug locally, then we can develop sort of mini Trojan horses that can get into the tumor and take these barriers apart from within. And then the immune cells can come in and the patients can respond to the drugs.
Wow, that's incredible. By the way, this is perhaps a stupid question, but for a layperson, are all solid tumors created equal, or are there whole different ranges of them, and so different bacteria and things like you're describing?
I mean, that's a kind of a two-part question. Are all solid tumors the same? No, they're not. Absolutely okay. Not. And there are, even, you know, before NEOB, even in the context of already existing immunotherapeutic strategies, there are solid tumors that already respond to them fairly well, and there are solid tumors that don't. And we're going after the ones that don't. And that has to do, again, sort of one of my favorite words, the microenvironment. It has to do with the microenvironment of these tumors, and it's not the same in all of them. And there are types of tumor that are known as being particularly fibrotic, particularly dense and stiff, pancreas being a classic example, subtypes of breast cancer, subtypes of colorectal cancer. And these particularly stiff tumors tend to be the ones that we're more interested in going after. As far as the bacteria goes, the conditions that you have in a tumor that are attractive for these bacteria do tend to be fairly widespread among different tumors. It's just a question of how accessible they are, and what the route of administration is going to be. Is probably going to be different depending on the tumors that you're talking about. But the bacteria sort of colonizing seems to be fairly universal.
Okay. So let's come up from the science for just a moment. Let's talk about the business, the team. Mm-hmm. What's that look like now? Where are you in terms of the development of this? What are the key steps that you're working on this year?
Yeah, we're still quite early. I think we're a fairly young startup compared to you know, some of the others that I've seen in the community already. We started last year, right in the beginning of 2021. So, you know, deep into the pandemic. But as I said, we were really lucky to have the support of Deep Science Ventures and also Cancer Research UK, which is kind of the biggest funder of cancer research here in the UK, one of the biggest in the world. They provided us with the funding that we needed to get the company started. And it was started by me, and we've talked about my background, and my co-founder, who I managed to convince to put this project together with me, who's called Annelise Soulier, and who is an extremely experienced bacterial engineer. So she's worked on bacteria as therapeutics before in a very successful company called Procarium here in the UK. So the two of us put the company together with the support of Deep Science Ventures and Cancer Research UK. We started building all of the genetic tools that we need to engineer these bacterial products, which is most of what we did during the first year. And we established ourselves initially in London. Now we're in Cambridge because we won a competition, sort of a fairly prestigious healthcare startup competition called the Accelerated Abraham Program that provided us with some free lab space for a few months in the Abraham Research Institute in Cambridge. And we, after that, were fortunate to win a grant from the British government called an Innovate UK grant. And that allowed us to start the development of a second research program. So we have two ongoing now, the one that we started with, where we're engineering one bacterial product that is specifically targeted at colorectal and pancreatic cancer. Yeah. And the second one that we're developing now that is directed at a subtype of breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer. And we're now currently starting to take our initial prototype and do some proof of concept studies with it. We've got a really exciting collaboration ongoing with an academic group here in London at the Barts Cancer Institute, where they developed some patient-derived models where we can study sort of patient-derived, microenvironment components. So we're testing our bacteria in those, and we're then going to start taking them into in vivo mouse models to confirm that they work.
Nice. So for a layperson or somebody who's interested, perhaps from an investment perspective at some point in backing the company, what does it look like in terms of what you are going to be raising for the company over time, either now or in the future? And then kind of in parallel to that, again, for people that aren't familiar with the general trajectory and realizing every company is going to have differences, but what is a life cycle of a company like this? You're in a research mode, you've got a lot of work to do. Where does it start to become, commercially interesting, assuming that the science is working? What can somebody expect or kind of anticipate, with the obvious caveats?
I mean, there's a lot of caveats, of course, but really the main challenge for a therapeutics company, and particularly a therapeutics company like us, where, we're a little bit different from other companies in that we started with with an objective. We started with an idea. That there's this problem, and we think that we've got the right solution for this problem, but we basically started from scratch last year. And I think we've accomplished quite a bit for just a year and a half. Mm-hmm. But that means that we've got quite a long way ahead of us, because therapeutics company will take, 10 years or so before they start becoming, commercially viable. Because the way that that's going to look is, right now we're in this stage that I mentioned, where we're starting to have some prototypes that we've been engineering, and we're going to start putting them into the right models to prove that their efficacy. And we're raising some money to be able to do that. We're doing we're in the middle of a seed round right now that we've divided into two tranches. One now that we're doing sort of mostly convertible notes, and another one that we'll convert those in a priced round early next year. And altogether, we're raising 1.5 million pounds, I should specify, to exactly take us to the point where we've got proof of concept demonstration of the efficacy of these things in tumor-bearing mouse models. Then the idea will be, on the back of that, to raise a Series A round that will allow us to go into preclinical development, which will be, things like toxicology studies, persistence studies, looking at, how the bacteria, how effective the bacteria is in these tumors, how well it works in combination with immunotherapy strategies, how easily it gets cleared from the rest of the body, et cetera. In parallel with that, start doing some manufacturing, right? Because we'll have to start optimizing how these things are going to look like when we start putting them into the clinic, how we're going to grow them in as sterile as possible environment, because we are talking about bacteria, how we're going to keep them, how we're going to prove that the genetic material that we added to them is stable and is not going to be, and is contained, right? It's not going to be passed out into the environment. We're planning to raise a Series A round of about 10 million initially in 2024 to do that work. And the plan is to then complement it with another 15 to go into first in human clinical trials around 2026. Right now is the plan. Commercially, the idea is that throughout this process, we will establish co-development deals with pharma companies, because kind of as I said, the whole idea behind this is that we're using these bacteria to enable existing immunotherapies, right? To take drugs that currently don't work in these patients and make those drugs that work in those patients. So we want to work with the pharma companies that make those drugs and sort of work together with them to make sure that we've got the right combination strategy when we go into patients. And that will then open the way for things like out-licensing deals, et cetera.
Well, it seems like a natural, you know, if you're making a drug significantly more effective, who better to benefit than the company that's got that underlying drug? So that's a pretty interesting twist on the theme. When it comes to science like this, what's the math behind, you know, is it binary in the sense that either this is going to work or it's not, or is it not quite that black and white where, you know, you iterate and iterate and maybe it takes some directions that you didn't anticipate? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you get to a point where you're 20 million into it and you're like, eh, it just didn't work? Or are, and, you know, depending on the answer to that, is there a sort of a go, no go point in research like this where you determine, you know what, there, it's clearly giving us some efficacy. We still have work to do to optimize it and so on and so forth. I mean, how do you think about all of that? Because you are the biggest investor. You're investing, as you just mentioned, sort of theoretically, you know, 10 years of your life or more.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you sort of buying off on the fact that you get 8 years into it and you're like, eh, it didn't work? Or is the math, you know, you're at a point now where you're like, no, it works. Or we think there's something there. We got a lot of work to optimize and look at safety. I mean, how do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that is a factor of how you put the company together, right? Because there are different ways of starting a company in the therapeutic space. And there's a lot of companies that get started out of the back of, you know, you find something interesting in the lab. How can we turn this into a commercially viable proposition? And then, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, right? Our process was a little different, I think, which makes it more likely to be successful, because we started with the problem and we went like, okay, let's look at everything that's out there. It's what's been done before and what's available. And let's try to find the perfect solution for this problem. And that involves looking at a lot of proven components, sort of taking everything to basic principles. What do we need to make sure that this works? What's out there? What are the basic components that we need to do this? And are they proven? And all of the basic components here are proven to an extent, from the fact that the bacteria can colonize the tumor, from the fact that, you know, we're using genetic circuits that have been sort of you know, shown to work before, the fact that we know that microenvironmental remodeling can increase immune infiltration. We know that immune infiltration can increase the efficacy of these drugs, right? Every single of those steps has been demonstrated in one way or another. The biggest question is, when we put all of this together, is it a straightforward sort of 1+1=2 equation? And it might not be. But I think if it isn't, it just means that, as you said, we've got a lot more work to do. It may just mean that, you know, we may need to work a little bit on the genetics of the biosensors that we're putting into these bacteria to make sure that they're a little bit more effective at being activated in the tumor microenvironment. It may mean that we need to add further genetic components to the bacteria to make sure that it can't survive anywhere else. It may mean that, you know, we need to add something else to the equation to make sure that the immune cells definitely are activated once they infiltrate. So there's steps, and those steps will lead to decisions, and those decisions are going to take us in the right direction. And all of those steps are, I think, the biggest go, no-go decision that is, you know, going to be 100% the go, no-go decision is we put these into patients. Does the basic of it work?
Yeah.
Right. And even if it's not perfect, then we can fix it. And then there's several sort of go to door one or door two decision points that we'll have to go through.
That's a great overview because it also gives us a little insight into your thinking and, you know, the matrix of which you're creating and navigating and clearly some clarity of thought around that. We asked this at Pitch Club and I want to ask it again. So sitting where we are now, which is essentially coming up on the beginning of June 2022, for folks listening, is there anything that, you know, you may need? Is it capital? Is it something else? And depending on those needs, who are the right types of people to fulfill those so that somebody says, yeah, that might be me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I would be facetious if, as the CEO of an early stage company, I wouldn't tell you that capital is something that we need. Capital is always going to be something that we need. And, you know, as particularly as a company that was developed in the way that we were developed, that is still in the preclinical stage, we're often stuck into this sort of chicken and egg situation where we talk to investors who say, this is really cool, we really want to be a part of this, but we need you to show us that this works in mice first. Right. And we go back to them and we tell them, that's great, but we need money because mouse experiments are expensive, in vivo experiments are expensive. Right. So you know, anyone that kind of helps us get out of that vicious cycle is obviously very, very welcome. But genuinely, I think one of the most exciting things to me about this group is the actual clinical input. I think we've got an excellent team in terms of the sort of the tumor cancer biology knowledge, in terms of bacterial engineering knowledge, with me and my co-founder and some of the advisors that we have in place, who are sort of academic experts in you know, tumor microenvironment biology, synthetic biology, bacterial engineering, et cetera. We've got some commercialization background with, you know, the support that we have from Deep Science Ventures and some C-level advisors. I think what we're really missing right now is clinical input, is making sure that we are developing these bacteria in a way that will fit in the current standard of care, and that we have a good understanding of what that standard of care is and how we have to develop these products in order to make sure that they fit in. So any sort of, you know, oncologist that is listening to this and who would like to get involved, we'd love to talk to you.
Okay. That's an easy one for us. We have a big network of oncologists. I'm wondering about a third area you kind of alluded to. You guys have won some awards, and I got to imagine that this space lends itself to additional grants over time. Do you have the bandwidth and the folks that can help sniff those out, or do you need help sniffing out additional grants and awards that could add non-dilutive capital along the way?
That's a really great point, actually. Yeah. We've got our eyes out there to see if we can pick up on opportunities that are out there, but I'm sure we're not picking all of them up. We were just successful in getting one. We recently applied to another one with a different academic collaborator in Europe, but we're not, you know, we're not that familiar necessarily with all of the non-dilutive grant options that exist in the States, for example. And there may be things there that we could be eligible for and that we're not doing.
Okay. Well, we'll have our antenna up for that as well.
Thank you.
And we'd love to, you know, this is a super interesting company in science. You're very articulate in describing it, which helps. We'd love to stay plugged in. So as you hit milestones, you know, good or bad, sometimes, you know, the good is the result of the bad, you know, this didn't work. Sure. And so we twisted and pivoted and iterated and here's where we are, but we'd love to keep apprised. So open invitation.
Absolutely.
To come back on the show or just throw us updates that we can share with the community and get people to lean in. I also get a sense this, I don't want to mischaracterize it, but there investors in something like this need to play the long game. You know, this is not a, you know, 24-month kind of a deal. So you need people with some patience, and they see the big picture. They see that you know, if you can increase efficacy of immunotherapy by, you know, some percentage, that's got a huge impact. So this has got big potential impact and big dollars associated, of course, but there's some time involved.
Time in almost both sense of the word. There's obviously that time aspect, which you're absolutely right. This is a long-term project, and anyone who is willing to help us out needs to understand that. But at the stage that we are now, we also want people who can give us their time as well. Mm-hmm. And we're not necessarily looking for investors who will just be able, you know, who will just come on board and say, here's some money, take it and go. Yep. We're a lot more interested in the investors who will be a part of the team and who will actually, you know, feel like they believe in the project and help us push it through.
I love it. That's cool. Well, Pedro, thanks a ton for spending time, particularly later in the evening on your side of the world. Really neat company. Congratulations on your work so far. I know there's a lot of hard work ahead, but this is an exciting space. So we're rooting for you and want to be here to, you know, provide any adrenaline and fuel that we possibly can. And I appreciate you taking your time.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. I really appreciate the invitation as well. And I'll definitely keep you updated.
Love it.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.